Yeah, the Buffalo ones
Pretzel
are those.
Pretzel City or like, Snack Factory.
Same thing.
Snack City. Yeah. One of those was my mom's nickname in high school.
Why not both?
Buffalo Snack.
Well, thanks, guys. This has been Snack Chat.
So recording for all us. That Lord of
Castamere. The following is a Mediocre Movie Club production. We bore his song with no one there to hear. Yes, now the rains. We bore his song with not a soul to hear.
Welcome back to the Mediocre Movie Club podcast. I'm John Kissel, and with me tonight is Shane Settner.
Yo.
Megan Norfleet.
Hey.
Ashley Keller.
Hey.
Bobby Schmidt.
Hello.
And Phil Krohn will be joining us shortly. He is not one to give his full attention to the Mediocre
Laundry!
Movie Club.
Son of a bitch. I'm here.
Great. Fantastic. Just stepping all over something that was nicely formed in my brain as far as talking shit about the Fantasy Movie League podcast. Whatever. You know, the podcast ruined. We're talking tonight about Game of Thrones' greatest hits. Everybody remembers Game of Thrones. It's, even though it's been a year since it was last on, and it'll probably be another 8 months or so until it is back on again. We decided, you know, we get good coverage. We get good cultural penetration on our Game of Thrones podcast. Shane winces every time I say the word penetration, like it's not a word that exists in the world. Get your money out of the gutter, Sutner.
I've never heard of
this nonsense.
Yeah. I'm excitable.
We figured, let's go back. Let's go back to the well. Let's go back to our most successful area of discussion.
Because it's the only thing we all want to do.
Yes. Also, also true. It can be many things. We can have many reasons why we want to do what we want to do. And we, as a group, decided upon a dozen episodes or so. I don't know exactly what the number is. And we're going to talk about them in pairs, going chronologically through the season. Seasons, the first five seasons. We podcasted about the seventh season and the sixth season, so no need to revisit those. And the first couple episodes we're going to talk about are the pilot entitled Winter is Coming and episode six of the first season entitled The Golden Crown. You know, these episodes happened so long ago, and everybody loves Game of Thrones. I don't really feel the need to do our usual, like, new episode of Game of Thrones type stuff where we're just going through plot point by plot point. First episode of the series, did anybody watch this as it aired, or did everyone, like, come to Game of Thrones a little after the fact?
I watched it as it aired.
I did as well.
Yep.
Caught the season. Bug.
I was after, slightly.
The first season only got, if you look at the ratings, the first season was about 2 to 2.5 million viewers per episode. It's comical compared to like season seven, where now it's 11, 12 million.
I don't remember like the critical consensus going nuts over these first few episodes either. And like a bit of like pilot backstory, like if you're obsessed with physical media like I am and you're resisting just everything being on zip drives, you get fun little extras like commentaries, and then you listen to those commentaries when it comes time for your movie club to rewatch an old series of television. And like this pilot was like 3 years in the works. It was originally directed by Tom McCarthy, who directed Spotlight and Win Win and The Station Agent, and by all accounts was a complete disaster. The show almost didn't get picked up because it was so bad. Like, major plot points like Jaime and Cersei are brother and sister were not apparent. And that's why you get like 80-yard lines of Arya pointing out who Jaime is. Like, oh, that's Jaime Lannister, the king, the queen's tween brother.
Shut up.
The very first thing Jaime says is, as your brother, if you feel I should say.
You have to really understand what Bran is seeing at the end of this episode. So yeah, they really made sure to hammer that home. Speaking of Bran, I feel like maybe the hardest thing to do in any like TV show is cast children. You just never know what's gonna happen. Like, you're betting on the future. Like, this kid isn't gonna look really weird in 3 or 4 years.
Four feet taller.
Yeah, and be like completely unusable in the show.
He was such a better actor as a kid. Like, when he was little, he was such a better actor. And I don't know how that happened, but it certainly did.
Yeah, I absolutely think he, in these first two episodes, specifically in the pilot, is the character that stands out as someone who is a lot better than you remember them being, especially because the show asks so little of him now. Where
he's also with Sansa and Kit Harington, and they're terrible. Like, I mean, they're awful.
I heard
Kit Harington really. Yeah. I heard Kit Harington really doesn't want the old pilot to come out. Like, I read in one of the articles about it. So yeah, you think how bad he is in everything we've seen. How much worse could he be?
Like, more fun commentary talk. It's like the actors that are still around, and it's not a lot. Like, something you notice from these early episodes is that you can have entire, like, important scenes in which everyone is dead in the show now. But of the handful of people that are still around, like, they like to taunt Benioff and Weiss with, like, you need to let this slide, or we'll let the original pilot, like, leak onto YouTube. Yeah, I would be very interested in seeing it. Like, they recast Danny, they recast Catelyn, and they got a lot of input from, like, directing friends and writer friends that if you put this out, your careers will be over. So it sounds
oh my gosh. Level
just garbage.
And they still let Peter Dinklage walk out with that terrible wig.
Oh my gosh.
They pulled the throttle way back on the blondeness of the Lannisters as the series goes on. Like, I feel like Jaime is not blonde at all anymore, and Tyrion has
no
for even longer. The only one they're really trying for is Cersei at this point.
And that's because it's a wig.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not her real hair, so.
Wait, what?
You know, they can. I'm sorry, Shane, did I just ruin something for you?
I mean.
All those funfers are staying in just because.
I don't even like this show anymore now.
Yeah, just the world has been ruined. There are no direwolves and there are no real Lena Headey hair.
I only
out in the world.
Watch movies for the hairdresser stuff.
Sure.
I'm really
hey,
into that.
Hey, like, in this season, the doggos are real. CGI is until next season.
Yeah, we're getting so much more dog action because they're real dogs.
Summer, the dog with the cute little ears that stick right up and almost touch. So
oh.
He's like, don't go up there. That was in the original pilot. Another reason.
Yes.
That is Scooby-Doo voice.
Ryan.
They did at the end, the actual closing shot of episode one is a zoom in on the dog's eyes glancing sneakily from one side to the other, implying that he is actually the Night's King and
spoilers.
It wasn't good is the point. The pilot was bad. So
stop go motion for the dogs?
We talked about the wigs being bad. We kind of skirted over Kit Harington and Sophie Turner not bringing their A game this early. I'm inclined to give Sophie
have an
Turner
A game.
I'm inclined
yeah,
to
what
give,
is the A game?
Yeah.
No, Sophie Turner's gotten so much better. I think she actually, I mean, if you look at her now and you look at her in those scenes with, like, Ramsay and everything, she's actually improved vastly since her earlier days, which makes sense because Kit Harington was a full-grown man in these episodes and still a terrible actor. Like, I'll give a pass to a kid actor that's not great. Sophie Turner was like 12.
I didn't even think
Sophie, and Sophie
Turner
was
that bad, other than when she said stupid and had four syllables. Stupid.
She's hampered by just the way that the character is in this first season.
That's, yeah,
I thought
that's
her fault.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Really well.
There's a reason that Sophie Turner still gets other roles other than Game of Thrones. Just, you know, Kit Harington's in nothing else.
Pompeii.
Except Pompeii.
He was in Gunpowder, which I watched all of, like, 3 minutes of.
I don't know what that is.
He was in that spoof, too, that HBO
sure,
sports.
Yeah.
The tennis, what was that one called?
7 Days
in Hell. 7 Days in Hell.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he was great
pharmacy,
in that.
But very good, nonetheless. Yeah, like, maybe he just needs to branch into comedy. And I feel like we've talked on the podcast, too, about the idea that they miscast Kit Harington and Richard Madden. Like, they should have swapped those roles. Like, John should be Rob and Rob should be John in that
just way. So he'd be dead now?
Show. Yeah. Well, but then, on the other hand, like if... it wouldn't be that big a deal when Robb Stark eventually gets murdered. It would just be a total shrug.
Everyone would be like, oh, thank God, he's gone.
Phrase. Yeah.
Give us more hats.
any other initial actors that really stand out? No, we mentioned Bran. Like Maisie Williams, she's always been, I think, like a real coup on the show as well. Go ahead.
Maybe this has been a problem because I've seen Love Actually too many times, but Mark Addy as
King Robert.
King Robert Baratheon just seems so.
Who is he in Love Actually?
He is the.
The fat friend to the singer?
The fat friend who's in love with the singer.
What? I literally just made that connection. I had no idea.
I believe that.
Me singer. Either.
I don't
no,
remember
is
that
he?
Subplot at all from Love Actually.
No. Oh, is that true? I don't know about that.
I'm pretty sure that's him.
No.
You could have told me he was the secretary that Hugh Grant falls in love with, and I would have believed you. I don't know. Memory from that movie.
No, her teeth.
No, the guy you're talking about, Shane, he is cross-eyed.
What? Hugh Grant's cross-eyed? I mean, good for him.
Yeah, Mark Addy was not in Love Actually, but the second link.
We just will never get those minutes of our lives back.
Jesus. I was bought him because of A Knight's Tale, which was another.
That's what I was thinking of. Very
close. Yeah, also so actually. Similar. A Knight's Tale and
they're both
Love Actually.
Oh no, yeah, for Shane, he's an idiot. Yeah. But, you know, they're both middle ages or whatever. Apparently, he was also in Robin Hood as Friar Tuck.
I have that movie here. I got it for free.
It Which Robin Hood?
The one with
Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe. I'm gonna fight you.
See, I watched.
Somebody
the
watched
version
that?
Of that. It wasn't bad.
It is. Oh, I think I do have the unedited version. It is still bad.
You know, Ridley Scott makes good movies. They just get cut to hell. So we like to be pedantic book readers here on the Mediocre Movie Club podcast. There are some improvements on the book. There are instances where the show blows it at this early point. For example,
which
Tyrion,
is how we meet Tyrion.
Oh my gosh. Tyrion is introduced in the books doing backflips off of a saddle or off of a stable roof. It seems like that's not a joke. That's a real thing.
That has to be in the original.
It's pilot. Not a backflip so much as like a jumps off and lands on his hands and then somersaults. So close.
Is he doing the I landed well move at the gymnastics Olympics after? I mean, I have to assume that he is.
Lands in says acting.
That was smart of the show to get rid of. Good for them.
I do think, well, yeah, it was smart to get rid of that part, but I don't think his introduction in the show was any better. Like, the first time we meet him there is in the brothel. And the first time we meet him in the books is when John sees him and then when he speaks to him. And I think that's more of a impactful introduction, especially to the character that Tyrion becomes.
Except that it's totally debuffed by this dwarf somersaulting.
Right. No, that's fine that they left that up.
He's frustrated about not being able to be a full member of his family. Like, here, let this somersaulting weirdo talk you out of your funk.
You see, the somersault's a metaphor. My head's spinning because I don't know if my father loves me.
Ooh, nice connection, Shane.
Thank you.
Again, all this might be in the original pilot. We'll never know.
We'll know someday.
The White Walkers, as they're depicted at this very early stage, they don't really figure out how to make them look until, we'll say, the fourth season. They're about as far away as possible at this point. I feel like they're wearing like brown shrouds,
yeah,
or
they're
armor
dark,
or something.
They're
you don't
dark,
really get a good look
grayish
at them,
color.
But they don't look good. They look bad. Whereas, again, in the book, it's a longer scene. Like, you get a sense of their personalities, even, which I, even at this late date in the show, you don't really have a sense of. And I don't know. Yeah, this would have been nice.
The little girl pinned to the tree was. They've increased their budget quite a bit.
Fair. So, like, yeah, that's fair. A symbol is not mentioned in the book prologue.
Well, no,
that?
It's the same with the White Walkers. that whole scene. There's the symbols they show in the like on the snow of the bodies.
Yeah.
We see that a lot throughout the show now and in various ways, but that's never once mentioned in the book. I listened to the on the audio thing this like afternoon, the first of the prologue, and basically they describe the bodies as just piled up and curled over and fallen.
Yeah, the symbols have always bothered me in the show because it just seems arbitrary thrown in at times. And
just to make them more exotic.
Yeah, but they say that it actually means something, but it's like they're just making up their own little gimmick here.
I mean, there's that cool like pan up shot that turns into like a big overhead in season three that I kind of think makes it all worth it. And then it goes away. I don't think it ever comes back, really.
It's in the caves, right? When
those John beautiful paintings.
Yeah.
The chalk drawings.
Deep sky blues.
Yeah, I mean, it's it's worth it all for that payoff, if nothing else.
I'm trying to get past that in my life. Why not just go up to a war veteran and ask him, do you have any friends killed, Uncle Joe?
So, theme alert for the show. I'm not going to rewatch the whole series. That's just too big of a bite to chomp on.
But slacker.
Whatever. You're welcome to do so, Phil.
I have a kid on the way. I don't have time for this.
I feel like in my discussions with people that have had kids, that's more or less all you do in the first 3-4 months is watch television.
Yeah, Blair watched a. Blair watched the whole series of True Blood in like a week.
I own a Nintendo Switch. I'm pretty sure I'm going to be like beating Octopath Traveler in that time period.
That sounds like a real thing. So anyways, theme alert at this early stage. If the listeners following along with our previous Game of Thrones podcasts, my ideal scenario for Game of Thrones is that the whole world gets burned down at the end of it. Or if not, the system as it exists is completely overturned because the system itself is poisonous. And if it's just someone else on the throne that we like better, then we're just, you know, moving the goalposts further into the future to win another series of dramatic events, much like are happening in the series now, will eventually happen again. Boring, unimaginative, the show can do better. So in that vein, the execution scene in the pilot where Ned kills the deserter. Very intimate. Like, he doesn't, and especially with the episode that we're talking about next in our recap, Baelor, when Ned gets it and Joffrey is booming out his declaration for all and sundry to hear. Ned is speaking very quietly, probably just to the point where the person that's being executed is the only person that can hear it. It's intimate, it's just for him, and it humanizes Ned. This isn't something that he's doing for show or to demonstrate his power. This is his duty, blah, blah, blah. The point is that the deserter and Ned, in spite of these drastically different execution techniques, are exactly as dead as the other. The honor that Ned so prizes himself on and ostensibly makes him a good leader and a nice dude, it doesn't make any difference in the end. The deserter is still dead. And all this shit needs to get turned around. O's and O's and O's, swear and swear and all that shit. So I'm going to keep an eye out for that kind of stuff. It'll be fun. And we're going to talk about this again a little later, too. Any other big, like, flashing thematic points we want to talk about in the pilot?
I think the biggest theme from episode one that I throw out there is just basically the show is going to be just fuck your norms. Whoever's watching this, we are going to murder some kids. We're going to fuck some sisters and brothers.
Nobody kept track of the number of characters on screen. How many now are dead, alive, or missing? Did they?
I feel like it's got to be like 25%. On screen, still alive.
I don't know. I mean, you're fucking mad.
I'm still alive.
Figure
yeah.
this shit out.
I did it a year or so ago, so before season 7 factored in. I know the dead list was the longest.
Oh, absolutely.
I do know that.
I mean, all we have, I mean, we can probably name the ones alive right now. It'd be quick.
Debbie, you can name the Starks for sure.
We don't need to just list characters.
Sansa.
Hey, you remember when
Jon Snow?
Jon Snow made it.
No, he died.
Oh. Yeah, he died. Yeah, he technically did die at a point.
So episode 1.6.
Before we go on, actually, I want to say I didn't get a chance to say when the first time I watched this was.
Yes.
I don't know if you remember this. It was actually at Ashley's wedding. The night before the wedding,
yeah,
you showed it to me in a hotel room with Blair passed out in the other
and
bed.
I don't think you made it all the way through. I think you fell asleep, and I think Dave Knox was very mad at me for making him stay up late and sleep in our No Country for Old Men roadside motel.
Ahem. Dave K.
Dave K. Yes, I'm sorry.
David
I'm
K.
Sorry, D. Knox.
Yeah, D. Knox didn't enjoy Indiana. The threat of Anton Chigurh blasting us with his hydraulic kettle gun. So episode 1.6, A Golden Crown. This episode in the words of the director, Dan Minahan, who again did the commentary by Physical Media, he referred to this as like the turning point of the season, where characters are revealing their motivations and you see where the rest of the season is going to go, where it's going to play, what mistakes people are making, and what's like characters are sealing their fate both in the episode and for several episodes down the road, specifically talking about like Viserys and Ned. We see the end of Viserys in this episode. We see Dany like consolidating her power as a Khaleesi. We see Ned making plans to leave after taking big, unwise steps. We see Tyrion escaping the Eyrie in a pretty great duel scene. That, speaking of like theme alerts, is the show in miniature. Just that one little sword fight there. So another great episode. But Shane picked both of these episodes. So do you want to like why these two in particular? You want to get into?
Thought they were cool as shit.
All right, as opposed to the other lame as balls.
Lame as balls. Now, this episode to me, so obviously the first one, I feel like you have to talk about it.
Sure.
I mean, and looking back, there's obviously some problems with that pilot, with some edits and blah, 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 and wigs. But this one, I know everyone says, you know, wait till Ned gets killed. That's like, if you're not in then you're not in. To me, it's this episode. This is a pretty good episode. We kill off a fairly main character that you think is going to be around for a while. God damn, that was a cool-ass death scene.
Yes. Let's just talk about that. That whole ending sequence, I think, is still one of the better things that Game of Thrones has done. It is a long list, as much as we shit on the show these days. Like, it is a high-quality show from moment to moment. But, yeah, I'd if I can remember back to watching this moment in 2011, yeah, it's stirring. It like gives you chills. That like the end credits music that like kicks in after a little moment of silence. It's really powerful.
No, it's really just that point where the show is just, it's really signaling at this point that, you know, you, to Shane's point, you know, you think you've got a major character here, and oh no, you don't. It's really Dany who, you know, it's kind of framed through Dany from the word go, but you really think Viserys is going to be around for more than six episodes. Yeah. He is framed as probably the second or third most important character in that area of the world. And really all he's there for is to prove that Dany is something special and he's just a false pretender.
Yeah, and like you can imagine the show keeping him around for a lot longer. You can imagine them, like, I don't know, like repairing their relationship over like two or three seasons, but the show doesn't even bother. Like, it sees that, and this is, you know, like verbatim from the books here and there, they've made their changes where they've deemed appropriate, and they could have gone a different way. They like looked at this scene and decided, we have to do that.
I feel like they took his power away fairly quickly. I mean, we saw it at the wedding, and even in 1.1, where everything was about Dany, the gifts, the wedding, everything. And he looked scared and just out of it. And all he did was whine about when he's going to get his army and his his trip across the narrow sea. In fairness to him,
he looks scared at that wedding because he's seen Temple of Doom, and he understands that, you know, if he's not careful, he might be in a room swarming with bugs and collapsing spike ceilings.
Also,
not a great scene, that Dothraki wedding.
There's only one death, which by the show's rules is a double.
That we saw. We only saw one.
I mean, Captain Exposition would have filled us in.
I didn't feel the need to spend that much more time with them.
I was just going to say that I thought that he was a really great bad guy. I don't know. I think we talk about that a lot. With like Jeffrey and stuff, and other in Joffrey.
Jeffrey's my son. And, 6 a.m. tomorrow, I will agree with you. He's well, yeah.
Here's why Joffrey and Jeffrey both are great villains. They can't do anything. They're bad at everything. But they think they're awesome.
Oh, so I actually met a guy named Joff the other day. He was
no, playing, you didn't.
I swear to fucking God, but it was Joeff.
Joe. What?
E-F.
Yeah. And he's like, yeah, it's Joff.
Joe.
That's not real.
He was like, I don't know, ancient.
Did he do CrossFit?
I don't know. We were at a pickup baseball game, and this old guy wearing like the most dad shoes possible shows up. And he hit the ball fucking further, and I
didn't. Sure, he hit it. He hit it in James Earl Jones's yard, and then couldn't get it back from the dog.
It was a whole situation.
You guys spent the whole afternoon building some kind of vacuum apparatus. Yeah. That just wouldn't take.
And then we sent the Latin kid to go get it out of there.
He was really fast. He was like, stepped in a watermelon.
Is no bueno. That's probably right.
I don't know that he ever actually spoke Spanish in that movie.
I know. I'm just saying what we did.
Did I say the movie? I meant real life.
We're in Buford Highway, so it's.
Yes, right. Viserys being a great villain, 100%. Someone they're just the vast difference between their self-image and who they actually are. I think that's what makes a great villain as far as the show is concerned.
Yeah, and I, as somebody who hadn't read the books, it took me a couple of seasons to really get a handle on Dany in general and just like what that backstory was. So when I was watching it, again, the second time, I had also forgotten that he was only around for 6 episodes. I thought he made it through at least the first season in my mind for whatever reason. But I kind of wish they had kept him around a little bit longer, if for no other purpose than for us to learn a little bit more about their background and the whole dragon thing. Because you learn in this episode that he's not a dragon and she is, but you don't really learn what that means until she comes out of the fire, which I can't remember when that happens either, but
that's the last episode.
End of the season. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
in the pilot, they just ask Illyrio, be like, hey, remember when we came to live with you? Illyrio goes, yes, I remember.
You guys don't pick up your towels.
Yes, I have. Enjoyed
this argument. I need to marry you to a Mongol equivalent.
So that you can return to Westeros, where your family was once ruling for 300 years. And 2 minutes of exposition.
That would have been helpful for me, Shane.
Just as clumsy as that dialogue might be in the pilot, there's a version where it was much, much worse. It exists somewhere.
And Illyrio is a puppet.
It's just super experimental.
I just want to see Shane's version of the pilot now.
How much worse could it be? It's the real version. Almost ruined everyone's career associated with it. Shane doesn't have a cinematic career, nothing to ruin. I say do it.
So many puppeteers lost their job when I got fired from
there. The puppet industry really hasn't recovered. We talked a lot about Viserys. Let's talk about Dany for a little bit. Is this like her high watermark in the show, 6 episodes in with 60-something to go?
I mean, I've never been a Dany fan. Rewatching, this is nice, especially with considering how episode 1 ends for her. But she's still doing it to impress a dude, so no.
Oh, I don't think so. I think, like, she shows a lot of range in this episode, I think. And, like, her big moments, many of which we're going to talk about as this greatest hit series goes on, it's very often in a different language, like Valyrian, and it's just like she's good with a threatening monologue in a different language. But I think here she just has a bigger range where she goes like from like legitimate joy and elation after she eats the heart to.
I will say I usually have a no eating dinner rule during Game of Thrones. I broke that tonight to watch this episode because I forgot about that.
Yeah,
it's a big gelatin.
She does have the
chunk of material apparently.
I'm not a big Emilia Clarke fan. And anyone who's seen Terminator or whatever
sure,
movie it was,
Genesis,
and the most of us who have not, but I'll agree, maybe her acting isn't the best. She does pretty good, and she has the best gulp. She goes, gulp?
Yeah, it's a solid gulp. Gulp?
until Grey Worm overtakes her, so seasons later. Wait, no, I guess it wasn't a gulp.
It was an air gasp. All
right. Yeah, okay.
You want to go over that again, John?
I don't.
You and your cultural penetration.
Danny, it's a real term. It's a real term. It means something. You can see our cultural penetration on Weebly as it goes up when we talk about Game of Thrones.
Gulp?
All right. Continuing with praise for Emilia Clarke, I do think that like that final scene is the best thing that she'll ever do on the show, because it is in English, and it plays out on her face very convincingly. It's like she's saying one thing and doing another. She is making, you can see her making decisions, and like that's it's also one of the better like episode endings, as I earlier mentioned, like the screams and the score stop and Jorah is whispering to her and she is speaking her final lines very like calmly and matter-of-factly, and then there's a beat and then there's the big Game of Thrones march theme or whatever, and it's all credit to her and the special effects people that made it look like that guy got a pile of molten gold dumped on his head.
Actually, mirrors a little bit episode one, where Jon Snow's like, don't look away. And here we have Dany saying, I'm not going to look away. So.
Yeah. And you got Jason Momoa as Khal Drogo, like, ducking down because he wants to see what this looks like.
Yeah, also gets to say more than no.
Yeah, you get a sense of Drogo as being, like, a smart guy as opposed to just a brute, because like he knows another language. Does how many languages does Viserys know with all of his superiority? So another theme alert, we've got the hunting scene featuring four characters, all of whom are dead.
Yep.
And and Robert is talking about how awesome things used to be when he was riding across the country going to war, having sex with women from every part of the kingdom, and Renly is rightly telling him, millions of people or thousands of people are dying while you're doing all this. It was good. It was fun for you. Great. Your experience does not dictate how the rest of the kingdom is feeling about how pissed off you are that a girl, well, we know now, a girl liked someone else. Like, Robert really, looking back on the show from, like, everything that a book reader and a non-book and just a pure show watcher knows now, a really terrible person who sentenced a lot of people to death because, I mean, sure, the king's insane and he arbitrarily murders people, but Robert was frustrated to be the bad leg in a love triangle.
I mean, who's got
the system is dumb. The system is really dumb.
You look at those four characters and by far Barristan's death is the worst.
Yeah, they really didn't treat him well.
He didn't. Cool character, and you're like, ah, even here, you're like, old guy, man. All right, he's kind of tough. I wonder how he'll go out.
Knife to the back from a guy in a mask.
Yeah, great.
We will not be talking about that episode. We won't be spending a lot of time in season 5. Anything else on this episode?
Wait a minute. Have we talked at all about... Are we going to talk about Tyrion and the Eyrie?
Please.
Okay, I was about to say, that's the best part of this whole episode, is the entire sword fight between... This is really Bronn's coming out party. I don't think this is his first episode, but it's really the first one where he has any meaningful dialogue.
The only time we see him before is fighting with Catelyn and them.
There, okay. Right,
I remember watching this episode and having to go back gladly and rewatched earlier episodes to try and pick them out.
There were a couple great scenes in this episode between, you know, Danny with the end scene, but I do love the sword fight in this scene, especially the ending where he, where when he defeats whatever that name, that nameless knight is, when Lysaeron says he fought with honor and, or you fight with no honor. And then his response is, and then of course his response is, and he did. And of course, look where he is now.
Do you want to act it out with me right now, Phil?
If that's any preview of how he acted out.
Phil, who wants to act it out with me? You ready?
All right, let's do it. Let's do it.
You fight with no honor.
He did. Nailed it.
Jesus Christ. Podcast awards.
We're submitting this one.
Are two words that will never be associated with the podcast. Up until this moment, anyways. I feel like we were in the running for a potty there briefly.
A potty?
My dream was, yes, a potty. I stand by it. It's out there.
Anyway.
Sir Vargas deserves better than Phil.
Another quality child actor casting with this sickly little Robin Aaron this was pointed out in the commentary. Like, he stands up to yell something, and when he sits back down, you can see he's, like, breathing heavy just by, like, standing up and yelling something. Whether it was on purpose or not, or whether that kid is just a huge nerd, big spaz. Like, they said that he wore super thick glasses in between takes, so...
He didn't really know he was acting.
It's a great merging of... actor and character there.
Mama and Papa said I'm going back in time this week. I'm going to be king.
Is it a coincidence that everybody in the Vale seems developmentally challenged?
It's the altitude, I think.
Yeah,
they don't really talk about it, but I'm guessing it's the isolation and the altitude.
Yeah,
I mean, if you ever been to Colorado,
there's
God.
Like a 15-page sequence in the books just describing how difficult it is to get to the Eyrie. Where you have to, like, get in a donkey cart and get pulled up in a basket.
It's a long trek.
Yes, it sounds difficult. We're talking about grown men here, too. Like, have to climb into a basket. Like,
I wish there was, like, a montage of someone getting up to the Eyrie. like an 80s-style montage. Like, someone in a basket. And then, like, yeah.
It sounds arduous enough that if you made it to the Eyrie, you would never want to leave. So... that all makes sense to me.
Yeah, like Phil said, it's the same thing as Colorado. Like, everyone thinks John Elway was dumb because of all the concussions. No, it's because he spent so much time in Colorado.
The altitude.
It's the altitude.
I mean, have you seen the quarterbacks he's drafted? My God.
Yeah. After drafting Tim Tebow, there's no doubt that John Elway gets around in a basket.
But, yeah, that place is the most terrifying to me because everybody there seems actually crazy, and I'm terrified of heights. So, Colorado or the Eyrie? I
could be
Colorado.
Describing either.
I could. But I had forgotten how terrifying those...
to fight mercenaries for you.
Yeah, I did. And I got the fuck out of there.
That's why I didn't go to Phil's wedding. Everybody... Not because Phil didn't invite me, but whatever. I didn't go because I was afraid of having to fight a champion out there in Colorado.
There were a lot of mothers breastfeeding inappropriately old children there at the wedding.
There was that kid that got kicked in the head by a 6'4" man.
That was hilarious.
a child got kicked by a 60-year-old man?
Yes, like someone thought they were a breakdancer and they like put their legs out as if they were a helicopter. And one of the blades kicked a little girl fucking square in the head. And she dropped like a small sack of potatoes.
What? Oh my God. Yeah. Please tell me this is on video somewhere.
We didn't have a videographer.
Now, maybe you out there may not know, but John Kissel has a extensive wedding grading system.
Oh, don't.
Does the kick to the head add to it?
100% it does.
Okay.
If I was the person kicked in the head, then no, but I wasn't.
So if Blair and I won an A+, we should have added more children kicked in the head.
What is Shane and Blair's wedding
to
at?
Allow for the possibility of it.
What is Shane and Blair splitting at?
I'm not going to talk about this on the air. I've reconsidered this whole thing.
He took off points because dinner was unclear at our wedding.
It was unclear. There was a mac and cheese that I there's a mac stages. And cheese that I hear legend of and never got to experience.
Oh yeah,
and
there's a whole mac and cheese bar.
Didn't yeah, there see was. It. Didn't have it.
I don't like to talk about grading weddings because people spend 5 figures on them, and I'm like C minus.
That is true. For the amount I spent on that stupid wedding, if you gave it anything less than a B minus, I would probably go out there and kick you right in the balls right now.
Yeah,
how about the head? Just like that girl,
brave man, to
kick
have,
him in the head.
Children getting kicked.
Yeah, you know that.
Getting grades on movies and those cost millions of dollars, but you know I don't know those people.
To be fair, at this point, that kid is old enough that I should probably ask their parents like. If there's been any kind of learning.
If they got that on video?
The speech.
Do you think the kid's dumb because y'all live in Colorado or because they kick him heads?
Really quite a lot of variables there.
A combination of thin air and head trauma. It's not making
people
smarter.
It'll do anyone in.
Yeah. So we're going to piece together segments as we go along. And an early segment that came to mind was, remember when this show was great? And to that end, I'd like to talk about the archery scene, which is a pure invention of Benioff and Weiss, who, you know, we give a lot of shit to, especially once they run out of material on the books. But I think that's just a perfect scene. I think it's, you know, all character. It's no plot. It's not expository. No one is saying, Rob, as my oldest son, X. You get a sense of like the dynamics and who's who and what kind of parents that Rob and Catelyn are and the relationships between brothers and sisters and brothers and so on and so forth. It's great. The show doesn't have time to just do these kind of scenes anymore.
But I think it also shows where the world goes from there. Like that was a very simple time when there was no trouble and that quickly changes. So we never really see it again.
Like, it serves a purpose on many different levels. Like, you can just take it as it is, and you can also take it as, like, the last moment of tranquility in what will be a long slog of misery over the next several years. And, yeah, I remember when this show was great. It was great from the pilot. Anybody else have anything they want to rave about, in comparison to where the show is now?
I forgot how much of a jerk Theon was to start out. That guy's taking a hell of a journey. That's all.
Which is interesting. In the book, he was worse. Like, at the execution, he actually kicks the guy's head after Ned cuts it off.
That actually doesn't surprise me.
No, it doesn't at all. But it just shows you, like, and Jon hated him back then in the books, and that's kind of different in the show. But, he's an ass.
That haircut scene kind of shows, I guess for some of the archery scene, shows the attitude of the three... Of Rob, John, and Theon, really, right?
Fun tidbit about the shaving, shirtless shaving scene.
Go on.
All of the actors did a dangerous level of push up or like sit ups beforehand, and they're not breathing. They're trying very hard to demonstrate their sexy bods, and I don't know. It's cold and dark in Winterfell. They're all very, very white men.
I went with that same method for my trial today.
Sure.
So just flex.
Shirtless.
I had a shirt, but I think the
shirtless
judge can
and calling
tell.
In a barber sure. while the other attorney is doing closing arguments.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, just get the neck mainly. This is a pure power move. Our next segment in the opposite vein is, and again, we'll work on the names, The Rot Was Here All Along. Danny's wedding night. This is also something that they talk about in commentary. I think pretty perceptively, despite how they altered this scene from the books, it's not good in the books. She is 13, maybe younger.
Yeah, 13.
More or less the same thing happens. He kind of coaxes her into it.
Well, it's in the books, it's like hours and hours go by where they sit there like undoing each other's hair and everything. And then he actually asks the question, no. And she says yes. It's still creepy because she's 13 and all this is happening. But it's still a far, far, far cry from the show.
It's demonstrative of the many problems that the show is going to have as it goes on with sexual violence. And it was there from the beginning. Like, this whole first season where there were, like, the relationship between Danny and Drogo, it does become, like, warm and loving. I don't know.
Stockholm Syndrome.
I guess, but she never breaks out of it. Like, she always carries a fond memory of Drogo, even though it's been years and she's a very different person than she was at this stage in the series. So I feel like if it was as simple as, like, Stockholm Syndrome, captor type stuff, she would have snapped out of it by now. But I think the show interprets it as a loving relationship, despite how ugly, like, the beginning is.
I think that's because they're bound to the books at least a little bit, and the books are able to flesh out their relationship a little bit, even though it's still creepy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of something, I think they're stuck with the source material. Danny has to like Drogo, and I don't know how you recover from that.
No, I mean, within the realm of the show, it's normal.
Right.
Like so many other things that isn't, that, you know, they're not normal to us. They are within this world. So I think if they would have even come closer to the show, or at least tried, it would have made at least a small difference in the long run.
I don't know if we're going to have something similar in the future. I think we did not choose some of the bigger sexual violence controversies that the show wades into in like the fourth and the fifth season.
Oh, I can't believe no one was like hype about watching that.
Yeah.
Like, let's talk about this.
yeah. No, I think it's interesting to go back and watch these episodes though. And then like, it just makes me hate Benioff and Weiss more in the last season when they're like, this is a feminist show. And like, look at all the ladies in power. And you're like, fuck you guys. Like, no.
We showed a penis now.
The commentary does not put them in a good light. Like, they talk about in the commentary, Emilia Clarke is a good actress. It's probably really difficult for a good actress to film a rape scene, because what do good actresses do? They put themselves in the mind of the character and they feel what the character is feeling. We choose to do this, even though there's a template for not this. And they don't put those... they don't put those pieces together.
Like, to be fair, Emilia Clarke didn't do bad in that scene. She came off as young, scared, and completely powerless. I mean, she did fine. So it's not like they couldn't have tried to do more for her.
Shades of things to come that, if we're lucky, we won't talk about again. any other like negative things that remind you of where the show is going to eventually, and I think I'm more negative than the average viewer these days on Game of Thrones. So, you know, it's fine if this segment, which we may or may not do in the future, doesn't play as well for y'all.
Kissel, I enjoy your curmudgeonly hate watching of this series.
I mean, I like when the show is good.
It was a little exposition-y in that first episode, I guess, maybe to set everything up. And like, that's some of the worst of the newer seasons is the exposition-y, like, let's go to the cave and say a bunch of shit and have conversations and look at Ygritte in battle and we stare lovingly to each other's eyes and then she gets shot. I mean, you kind of see a little bit of that overdramatic stuff here in the exposition.
Yeah, speaking of getting into like the later seasons, I did find it fun that there was a Beric Dondarrion sighting.
Yeah,
just randomly, some dude, no idea who that guy is.
But it wasn't random. Like, Ned called him out by name and gave him like a legit purpose. And the next time we see him, he's got scars and patches and different actor, everything.
That guy disappeared completely.
Like, you see Tommen and Marcella in the pilot. Those actors are going to get recast. That Barrett guy. You had one scene and one line. You're a glorified extra.
Did he stick even around have a
for
line?
2 years? Yes. I think he said yes, sir.
I think he just nodded the whole time. They're like, we don't have to pay him.
stick around for 2 years and we're going to come back and we're going to give you a super beefy role and you're going to be doing stunt choreography and sword fights with like one of our secondary stars. No, we're going to recast your ass.
How many mountains have we gone through at this point? Are we on our third?
2, 3, yes.
This is our third, I believe. Yes.
Third mountain, got it.
Which is fine because his face we'll never see again. Or we will, but it won't be a face.
Right.
I think we'll spend a little bit of time with the second mountain, and he's just a tall weirdo. He's not like the stocky Norwegian strongest man in the world that they eventually landed on, which I think was the way to go. So we skipped over 4 episodes. We're not going to go back and talk about them, but is there any like ruefulness? I wish we would have talked about this scene or that scene in those 4 episodes. Like Shane, you talked about exposition. I think like the second episode in particular is really bad about exposition. And I'm not sorry we skipped over that one. But on the other hand, like that second episode does also have a very strong ending where Ned has to kill Lady, and it's intercut with Bran waking up from his coma. Strong editing, great editing there, as well as the wolf like ripping out that the assassin's throat and then very calmly going back and lying on the bed. Excellent. Yes. Wolf acting.
Yes.
Rewatching that and Ned killing Lady, it made me wonder, because the whole like the first episode he says the whole you're gonna feed them, train them, and if they die you're going to bury him. Did he make Sansa bury Lady? Because I doubt it.
I don't think so. I think he sent her back to Winterfell.
But he should have, because he said, and he's a man of his word.
He truly sealed his fate in that moment by going against his code.
I'm going to give a shout out to one of my favorite side characters, Jory. That guy. He's great.
Is he?
He's iced in 1.5, right?
Yes, he gets a dagger through the eye.
Good, another good death.
Sure.
And I don't know. I think there's like one of those actors. You're like, this guy might be around in a while. He's kind of a fun little sidekick there. He's got a knife in his eye.
Yeah, he gets a little like personal shading, wanting to hang around the brothel for a little longer than Ned is comfortable with. That fifth episode, I considered making that my last pick. I went with the wolf bread episode instead. Something to look forward to, listeners.
Ah, crying. Can't wait.
But that fifth episode has arguably like the best show invention that the series has pulled off, with the scene between the king and Cersei where they talk about
their marriage,
where their marriage is, where their marriage was, if it ever could have worked. And that goes
holding the kingdom together.
Yeah, that's a great scene that I think still holds up and is not in the books. And I think that it's also indicative of them softening Cersei. Cersei in the show has a baby with Robert that she doesn't in the books. And I think it's believable. I don't think it hurts a character at all. I think that it's reasonable for her to make an effort with this guy and then backtrack on it. I like that is canon. Like,
I don't know, but like she also says within the same few episodes how at one time, you know, she worshipped him, but it basically the day after their wedding, it all changed because, you know, he said Lyanna the first time they were in bed together. So I don't know if I buy the whole child thing. I just don't think she would ever even attempt to bring his child into the world.
You know what would be fucked up is if he was just saying laundry, just like filled it earlier, and that's just like one of the things he says when he introduces stuff.
Classic medieval kings, worried about laundry.
Full circle. Good job.
We didn't have this show.
I feel like we just brought it full circle.
Yeah, we did.
Anything else? Anything we left out?
I think one of the bigger things we missed, and it's not really a scene in general, but Littlefinger and Varys. We got a lot of them within these episodes we didn't talk about and who they are. Yeah.
We'll get a good share of Varys in our next episode, where we'll be talking about 1.9 Baelor and 2.3 What Is Dead May Never Die. Both.
What Is Dead May Never Die?
What?
Is that what they say? What Is Dead May Never Die?
What Is Dead May Never Die? But rises goes again, harder and stronger.
They always say that, and then Theon's always like a half beat behind. They're always like, "What Is Dead May Never Die?" And he's like, "Yeah, what is it? Yeah, what is it?"
For our listeners, just what? To build some sympathy for myself and Shane, we hear ourselves in our ears as we're speaking. And when Shane really leans into the microphone and does his aggressive accents.
Accurate accents.
Whoa, boy, does that rattle in your brain.
Yeah. I'd like to believe I'm culturally penetrating your ears, John.
All right, well.
It's a word, John. It's a word.
It's a word. Yeah, it's a phrase. It's a word. Words have meaning.
I hope you write it in your diary. Shane culturally penetrated my ears multiple times.
When you're in your 30s, you call it a journal.
Why does yours say John's diary still?
I have to finish the book. I'm a frugal, thrifty individual. Why would I throw out a good diary in exchange for a journal when there are pages in the diary still? You know?
Yeah, that would
the
explain.
The lock still works.
Explain why the beginning of the book is in colored pencils, but now it's a feather quill pen.
I like colored pencils when I was 32. Sue me.
It's one of the reasons we let you move in here.
Yeah. Pencil shavings everywhere. We'll be back 2 weeks from now, give or take, to talk about those two episodes. We'll be joined in the future by Sean Riley, who will be returning with his top five lists, and Blair, you know, as she's able, will also be jumping in. And again, we're going to go through the first five seasons. We're going to spend a lot of time in season 3 and 4, which I'm really excited about. I think that's when the show is at its absolute best. Praise for these early episodes notwithstanding. So a lot of fun stuff to look forward to. Maybe we'll come up with some games, come up with some more segments. We welcome your feedback.
I mean, I put a game option. I just wanted to talk about Maude being a Trump voter, but
why? Least... Because he's dumb. Is that all you got?
Where's the gold? I don't see anything. It's just basically Maude is Twitter in person form.
He doesn't even use.
You're not wrong.
He's
not
140
wrong.
Characters Twitter. Yeah. He hasn't evolved to the 280 yet. He doesn't even need.
Well, I don't see any. Where's climate change? I don't get it.
Tyrion's in the 280 version when he's talking about possession being an abstract concept.
Tyrion's doing like the 1 of 12 thread. Before we go, I will say John fully committed to this podcast, going back to Game of Thrones, and has apparently caught grayscale all over his arms and neck. It's disgusting.
I have poison ivy rash. It's so bad. Tables. I am a sloppy landscaper.
Understood.
Just grabbing fistfuls of foliage off of my bench. So, you know, live and learn. My poison ivy rash is going away. Shane is exaggerating. I was totally going to get a haircut today, but I thought that would be mean to the barber because it is on the back of my neck as well. I don't know how I got on the back of my neck.
Were you like a bear?
Wiping a little
like,
sweat,
this
probably.
Tree looks like it'd be really great to scratch my back.
It's a fucking jungle in Georgia. Like, just the fucking foliage is out of control. And something must have brushed against my back.
Yeah, poison
back
ivy.
My neck. Yeah, poison ivy, yes. That's enough John dermatology talk.
I'm sure that'll be the highlight of the
pod. MediocreMovie.club. Like us on Facebook at Mediocre Movie Club, Twitter at Mediocre Movie Call. We are talking about Heat right now, Michael Mann's mid-90s masterpiece about cops and robbers, Pacino, De Niro, all-timer heist flick. The review for that will be up by then, and we'll have our new trio movies coming up shortly, as well as a podcast talking about our last trio, being Heat, Free Fire, and another mid-90s masterpiece entitled Cutthroat Island.
If anyone would like to post on Cutthroat Island, just draw your worst possible drawing in MS Paint and post it, and that's pretty much the best review you could possibly come up with, Cutthroat Island.
Thank you for joining me tonight, everyone.
Thanks, John.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Have a good night. So